I'm Michael Cross, host of the KOSU Daily Podcast. Every weekday, I bring you the biggest Oklahoma stories of the day with reporting and analysis from our team of journalists and partners. Get the news you need to start your day in less than 10 minutes. Find the KOSU Daily in your podcast feed and subscribe now.
This is Songwriters and Tour Writers, a music podcast from KOSU, Matthew Viriapa. On this episode is Red Dirt Band, The Great Divide.
You've seen me at my worst.
The Great Divide came out with a new album in 2022 titled Providence. It was the first album of new original songs by the original lineup in 20 years. The band returned to Stillwater in 2023 with an additional member of the band, Bryce Conway, who prompted the latest release. In this episode, hear Mike McClure, JJ Wester, and Kelly Green talk about what it was like going into the studio for their latest album, playing concerts in Stillwater, and why they prefer being called the uncles of the red dirt scene. That and more on this episode of Songwriters and Tour Writers.
I can breathe again. I can breathe again. My name is Mike McClure. I'm a singer, guitarist, songwriter.
JJ Lester, I play the drums.
And this is Kelly Green, bass guitar.
It's unfortunate that Bryce, right? Keyboardist?
Yeah.
He isn't here right now because he's kind of the impetus for this new album that you guys put out last year, right?
Yeah, he's kind of that. Yeah, he was definitely encouraging us, you know, saying, hey, man, you guys should make a record. You know, you guys, people want to hear your music. And he worked on us all kind of individually and collectively, corporately. And we finally said, okay, let's do it.
Relentlessly.
Yeah. But we're glad we did. I mean, it was a lot of fun to get back in the studio together, and it felt like old times and new times at the same time. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll do it again.
You know, I really hoped Bryce could have made it in, but I just want to ask, like, that's kind of the newest element to your guys' music. What's it been like having a person like Bryce around?
It's great.
Not fun. Yeah, no, I don't enjoy it.
Yeah, his enthusiasm is contagious. You know, he bugged us for 20 years to be in the Great Divide, and we always just said no. And then one day he came out to a gig, and Jay invited him to a New Year's Eve gig. And God, all of us were just blown away by how good he was and how much a B3 is integral part of Great Divide's old sound. You know, we had it very sparsely live during our heydays and stuff, but now having that every show, it's like this glue that's underneath the music. And, you know, it takes a load off of everybody having to, when it's four guys trying to cover this whole space, it's nice to have something up there gluing us all together. You know, that you can kind of fall back into, ebb and flow out of. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's funny just the perseverance he's had to get into the band and then make you guys, like, kind of get into the studio again.
Yeah, he is nothing if not persistent. Even in the face of several hard passes, you know. Bryce, that's a hard pass. Okay.
But what about what you're saying is there's a chance.
Right, if I put it this way.
Yeah. No, Bryce is great. We all love him.
What was it about, like, his pitch to, like, make a new album that finally, like, broke through?
Yeah, you don't have time for that, bro. He would, you know, he'd call me like, hey, Jay, man, hey, listen, I was thinking, you know, you guys met, like, it's just this most random back and forth, and you're sitting there going, I think you're trying to ask me something. Just say it. And he would say, we need to make a record, man. And I'd say, okay, Bryce, well, you know, tell the guys. And he's like, oh, I talked to Mike. And I'm like, okay, we'll tell the other guys. And he goes, well, you should tell them. I'm like, well, you're the one pitching the idea, man. You know, they'll listen to you. Oh, no, man, you need to tell them. And then, you know, I would say, Bryce, you tell them. And it certainly seemed like he was going and talking to individual parts of the band when all he had to do was just come to the whole band at one time. And we probably would have said great, you know, but he's just funny that way. He tries to paint this picture before he gets to the point. You're just like, I just want to know what you want, man. Just say it, you know, like a kid wanting to ask for candy or something and don't want to ask for candy. So you finally just have to say, well, just say what you want, Bryce. We'll do it. Maybe that's his tactic. Maybe that is his wear down tactic.
It works. I mean, here we are discussing him and this record.
It is effective, yeah.
And him being in the band.
Yeah, you're right. God, we're stupid, man.
Yeah. Did you guys all get to meet up physically in person?
Yeah, we did. We were all in studio together in a studio called Real Time down in Denton, Texas. A guy we've all worked with before, his name's Eric Delagarde. And then Lloyd Maines did some recording isolated from us.
Now, it was important for all of us to get in the same room and build the song up from the floor like we used to, you know, instead of me just recording my part, sending it to somebody, letting them put a part on. It was organic that way. And I think that's why this record feels like the old records, because that's how we used to do it. And so that was cool to do on this one. I think it shows and sounds. And then to have, you know, Bryce sitting there with his energy and excitement, it rubs off on all of us. And that was cool to make a record through his eyes and ears and have him involved in it. It's just great.
In what ways, like, was it the same and also different now?
We've actually had a lot of people say that listening to this new album, Providence, that they can, you know, they can pick out a song and it'll remind them of one of our older songs from, you know, 25 years ago. So we get that compliment a lot that even though it had been whatever it was, 18 or 20 years since we put out an album, that they'll listen to a song and go, man, that reminds me of this. They're, you know, this old Great Divine song. They're happy that we didn't go out and completely change our sound, but like Mike has said, you get the four of us in a room, and now with Bryce, we play the instruments the way we do, and you know, and it comes out, it's going to come out the Great Divide no matter what we're doing. But that's been the coolest thing to me, is just people saying they can hear old stuff in the new stuff.
Now tonight there's a back road and a pickup truck and a cab full of buddies. They're getting drunk, and this Boone's Farm wine, and it's wild turkey straight. They're pulling their pickup through the pasture gate.
Yeah, I don't think we could change how we sound if we really wanted to, you know.
Oh, that's why we were never a good cover band. We only sound one way.
When we first started, we would try to do covers of Top 40 because you had to get jobs, or we thought. We were told that, and so we'd learn some, and we butchered them. We were terrible at covering other people's songs. And well, if we're going to butcher a song, let's butcher our own, you know? And then we've been doing it ever since.
Ever since, yeah.
You guys have never really stopped songwriting, but what was it like returning to an album kind of form for The Great Divide?
It's kind of like relearning to some degree what you already know, but the studio is such a vast difference of playing live. It's the polar opposite of playing live. It makes you so much better in so many ways. in technical ways, but it makes the band tighter as well. I mean, we come out of the studio and played the shows after we finished recording, and I could audibly tell we were just better as a group just from being in there and that tightness and having to be on time and in tune and those kind of things make you a better band. But it's always so very educational. It's always amazing, like Mike said a minute ago, building the songs from the ground up to get to see what that ends up looking like. You know, it's like you get to see the picture painted first for anybody else.
Now, I was just going to say, from a songwriting point of view, it was since we quit playing together, quit recording and making albums, I've always had songs I've filed away like, oh, that'd be a cool Great Divide song. You know, that's just always been in my head. So when we got together, it was the first thing to do was I pulled out the 10 I thought were the best of all the ones that I'd bookmarked for Great Divide in my head. And then we had a deadline of a few months of when we were going in. So that made me start going, okay, I'm going to try to beat these from the perspective I'm in now, which is all of us going out and playing shows and hanging out. So it allowed me to lyrically speak to things that were going on right now, which made it current and which gave it energy for me. It's like not going out and playing old songs that I wrote in my 20s or 30s, which is what, you know, a lot of what we do, and that's cool, but it's also really cool to be able to look around just like I was doing back in my 20s and 30s, which was just documenting my life. You know, those old songs were about Yesterday Road and, you know, back things I was doing while that was going on. And now I can look around and document my life as a writer as well. And it bleeds into this music, and I get to do it with a band that I love and group of people I love doing it with.
The first track, Wrong is Overrated, really paints a picture of you guys kind of as a group, and maybe a little bit of insight into why it took 20 years to make a new album.
Probably because it took 20 years to say these things.
Yeah.
It's like Wrong is Overrated was the one I was thinking about when I was seeing how I was being able to write from a current perspective. And that's my perspective is looking back, seeing where I made a mistake as a human being, where I could correct it and correcting it, you know, and then being okay to admit that at some point in your life. You know, and hopefully someone else can do that, you know, somebody that hears that song. Because that was my path was Great Divide. When we first blew apart, you know, it's so easy to just blame everybody else but myself.
Yeah, here we go again, one more time around. One more time with Feed Then if you still have some.
And I think that's what we do a lot of the times. And that took years of being so selfish and being able to see, you know, there's other people involved. And that took a lifetime, and that for me.
And I'm getting older now, and my memories are faded. When I made such a mess, when things got complicated, and all the things that I love the best are things that I have sometimes hated. But I caught myself before I got too jaded, and I must confess that being wrong is overrated.
Now, this new record has got a lot of hope in it, you know, which is pretty amazing at this point in our career to be full of hope, you know, because that gets dashed.
How did you guys react to the song when you first heard it?
Kelly?
He said next.
That's all you got, Mike? Really? No, honestly, I do remember the first time I heard it, and I was like, man, that, you know, it takes a lot for any songwriter, especially, you know, Mike coming back to us after all these years and having been gone from us for 8 years, for him to say that and to put it out there, not only to everybody, but to us personally first. That takes a big person, and you gotta respect that. So you know, you have to return it, and it did. It meant a lot. I hope everybody else sees in it what you gathered out of it when you heard it the first time.
What were some of the first songs that you had written for this album? Like, you had bookmarked some away, you said?
I got to see what's on this record.
I can tell you that during that 2-month period where Mike was writing the new music, trying to, like he said earlier, he had these songs he had earmarked over time, and he was trying to write songs about, you know, life right now and beat those 10 songs that he had earmarked. So it was kind of like you'd get these little Christmas presents. You'd get these little texts with Mike sitting in his kitchen in front of his refrigerator or something, because he would get like a verse and a chorus, maybe, and another verse, and he'd just send you that little tidbit just to get our input on it. And so it was really cool just how they started from really just an embryonic place and what he was popping in his brain, putting down on paper. And so to me, that was one of the funnest parts about it.
Well, it's been long enough. Everybody's had it rough. It's been a real tough path we've all been going through.
Like Mike said, for us, it's always been important for us to sit down in the same room and build the songs up. But Mike's always been the songwriter. And so getting to see those things even before it's even a completed song is one of the things of the process I've always enjoyed about being in a band. So that was really neat for me, just to kind of see them growing from out of nothing.
In this world, I got her as a book. So cover me and I'll cover you. What if everybody came together and we all tried to do a little better and we set the blame down? Yeah, we set it all down.
Yeah, I was just looking at these songs, and the first one, two, three, the first five songs were new songs that were written from when we said we were going to go do it. So only four were ones that I had earmarked before that made the final cut. Yeah, My Sweet Lily was a song I'd written. Somebody was putting together an awesome album, some Texas songwriter album, and they said, if you turn in a song, we'll give you $1,000. I'm like, yeah, I got a song. And I wrote My Sweet Lily and recorded it, and I always thought, man, that's a great bad song. Should be. Sounds like it.
Won't you take me to the place where you like to hide? Won't you open up your jewelry box? Let me put my love inside. Won't you take me to the pastures where your wild horses run? And cover me in amber in the morning sun. My sweet lily of the valley, a finer woman has never been born. You're my redemption for the miles I've traveled. You're my angel, my wings are torn.
But yeah, most of it was, the very first song was Good Side. Really, when I heard we had we were going in the studio, I was like, oh my God, that just really, something about that pressure makes me focus, you know, to where I don't have a deadline. I might fiddle with something and not come back to it for a month, you know. The deadline, though, I'd sit down and just keep coming back to it, not not letting go of it. And, you know, I wish I could do that all the time, but I gotta have a deadline, I guess.
Have somebody holding a gun to your head.
In a way, yeah. It's like some part of like, okay, money's been spent. I don't want to go in there and be thinking, you know.
Yeah, so you guys got anything?
Yeah, and I got nothing this time.
I don't know, man.
Then KG breaks out the cowboy poetry.
The hillbilly haikus.
The hillbilly haikus.
I'm kind of curious then about, like, you know, when you're listening to all these little voice memos that Mike's sending you along the way, is there something that you're listening for that you're like, oh, this sounds like a Great Divide song, or I can do something on this that makes it feel like a Great Divide song?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really listen to it in those terms. If Mike sends a song, I think collectively, certainly for me, we're just listening to it to see if, you know, we think it's right. I was blown away by the stuff Mike was sending. I thought it was really good.
Well, your diamonds keep shining and bringing you luck. Love is a long shot, you know. Down in the valley, deep in the ruts, where the wildflowers grow.
Mike had written some stuff for a movie soundtrack that he let us come down. We played three of them as the Great Divide. And I heard those back, like, I don't know, it maybe a year after we did it, I forgot about it. And I was just like, man, you know, that's, his writing has just gotten so mature and so cleverly crafted. And so, you know, when I got those little memos, those little videos of Mike singing parts of the songs that he was writing, I was just truly blown away. Like, and I could go back to Mike's original statement about wanting to write about, you know, our life right now. And it's always seemed that way to me the years we were together touring, but it felt that way again when I was listening to these songs. I was like, man, he's telling the story not only of himself, but the Great Divide in the last 15 years and where we're at right now. So I just really could, all the songs I really connected with quickly. It just, they all made sense to me.
We'll be right back with more of my conversation with The Great Divide after this break. You're listening to Songwriters and Tour Writers.
Hey, it's Ryan LaCroix here to say thank you for listening to Songwriters and Tour Writers. If you're looking for more Oklahoma music, be sure to check out KOSU's Oklahoma Music Minute, which features five Oklahoma musicians and bands each week. You can find that at kosu.org. Also, every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, I host the Oklahoma Rock Show, 2 hours of local rock, pop, country, and hip-hop, from Guymon to Durant, to Miami to Lone Wolf, and everywhere in between. Listen to the Oklahoma Rock Show every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on the radio at kosu.org, or by telling your smart speaker to play KOSU.
I'm Matthew Viriapa, and you're listening to Songwriters and Tour Writers. And on this episode is The Great Divide. We recorded this interview in the fall of 2023, ahead of their big hometown concert at Tumbleweeds in Stillwater. But first, I asked bassist Kelly Green, who co-owns the local bar, The Salty Bronc, about what the Stillwater music scene is like today.
Now it's all flown by in the blink of an eye. I wonder if I could let you see from my view straight into you. After all we've been through, I would bet you.
Kelly, you said you were living in Stillwater still, or near Stillwater?
Yes, sir.
What's it like seeing the scene lately over there?
Honestly, I get to see it and hear it more than I did before COVID, because me and some other partners, including Scotty from the band that isn't on right now with us, we started a little bar in Stillwater. So I spent a lot of time hiring new up and coming kids and songwriters and young bands from this area. And just to be real honest, I think it's cool that there is a good happening scene right now, but it's like they don't know how to stand apart from each other. They're all doing the same songs. They're, you know, even if they don't, even if they sound similar, or even if they don't, they're still doing the same material. There are a few songwriters that will get out that, you know, you can go hear some original stuff, but there's just so many new up and coming people in the Red Dirt, Texas, whatever you want to call it, scene, that it's hard to stand out. And the ones that are the ones that are like Mike McClure was when we started out. They're doing their own material, and that allows them to get outside of Stillwater and go do other markets. But it's been very interesting here the last few years. But it's good there that the scene is really active.
What's it like whenever you guys get to play Stillwater
again? Town has live music at some point. Well,
everybody they know comes out.
Everybody you ever know comes out. No, it's awesome to get to play in what, you know, in our hometown.
The show is amazing.
Yeah, the show's amazing.
That's why we only do it once every year or once every other year, because there's really only one place in town that we can put that, you know, that bigger crowd, and that's playing out at Tumbleweed like we're doing this Friday. Yeah, it's cool because you'll get people that used to come out. Man, we used to watch you everywhere you went 30 years ago, and now they can make, you know, one show a year.
We're pulling out this show. We're pulling out some songs we normally don't play off the first record. People going to be excited to hear these old classics.
Oh, man. I hope we don't butcher them.
That's what we did 30 years ago, is butcher them. I mean,
that's true.
What's funny is, you know, when we first started, you know, I was a terrible singer. I didn't want to sing. And I still think those recordings sound terrible. And now people will come to a show, and now I'm comfortable with my voice. And they're like, man, you sound just as good as back in the old days. Well, I hope so. It's the old days here.
Gee, thanks.
It's so funny, man. I can't tell you how many people tell me that first album is their favorite record, and I'm like, God.
There's something that's magic on that record.
I totally agree. And it's not that the record's not good. It's just that we were so green and unprepared. We didn't have a clue what we were doing, you know?
Sunlight through the window. It's hurting my head. There's a trail of smoke filled close. The doorway to my bed.
You go back and listen to that first record, and there is something magical about that. And you can just hear the want and hope in all of us, you know, like it's just
all the,
yeah, man, you know, just this naive.
Naive, terrible band goes for it was the hit.
Yeah. There's your caption. But anyway, we are going to do some songs off the first record, as this is kind of the quote unquote, the final Bedlam football game. And we're getting back home and play. We thought we'd dig into the old repertoire and dig out some stuff off the first album.
That don't bother me any. I know what I'm spending it on. I'm going for broke. The last time is gone.
How long has it been since you've played some of these songs?
Oh, wow. One of them probably is since the 90s. The 1890s.
Oh, man. That's going to be exciting, man.
I'm going to reveal it. It's going to be a surprise.
We miss her all last night.
So there's going to be a documentary about your guys' reunion, too?
Yeah, that's in. That's being put together right now. We recorded several live shows, and this crew, that some of them were camera guys from the Discovery Channel. The greatest, what is it? Deadliest Catch.
Well, yeah.
They brought their camera crews out and shot us out on the road and at three or four different shows. And they just got one of the live shows from the Criterion in Oklahoma City mixed down, and it sounds really good. And You know, it'd be cool to put out a live album of that, but for the documentary, it's going to be in that. So hopefully that's all next year.
How do you guys feel when people like label you guys as like the godfathers of red dirt music?
Well, you know, Bob Childers was the godfather of red dirt, you know, and I came to town. So it's kind of one of those things of, yeah, you may know me, but really red dirt music existed before the Great Divide, and that's who was called that.
Oh, reasons that don't matter. I was walking down the alley when I heard this music coming through the stream.
So that's, it's like, you know, we'll be the old uncles, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say the old dirty uncles. The
old dirty uncle that, you know, might give a kid a drink.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Get his first cigarette.
Teaching some bad jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't grow up and realize that was wrong.
Scobby's knob, send him on his way.
Yeah, so godfathers of it, that always makes me a little uncomfortable just because of that fact.
Yeah. I think for the most part, people will say we're the pioneers and you know, fortuitously, perhaps providentially, we were the first band doing this style of music that's been coined red dirt, that had some national success and kind of took it to a broader audience. So that's a little bit easier pill to swallow than godfathers, for sure.
First ones through the wall.
Yeah.
The Nashville wall. Of course, that was the goal. You know, everybody wanted a record deal. Nashville was the place to go get one.
So yeah, that was.
Was the goal.
Universal goal. Yeah, no question about it. That's how you measured whether you made it. You know, that was the show.
Yeah, that seems to still be true. Caitlin Butts, Wyatt Flores, they didn't really make it out as big as they have until they moved out to Nashville.
Yeah, you know, that's something Garth Brooks told us when we were young. And we went out and visited him in the mid-90s. He said, need to move out of here. You know, he said, this is where you want to play major league ball. You need to go where the teams are. And he goes, this is where the teams are. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And then we went out there and didn't take. So we went home and started doing our own thing. And then eventually Nashville called us.
I guess why did you guys not feel like you really gelled with that kind of system, I guess?
Just felt like nobody cared, you know. We went out there and pitched stuff, and horribly, you know, JJ and I drove my old 83 Grand Prix out to Nashville with cassette tapes, you know, handing them around. Just didn't know how to do it, really. Yeah, and I felt like we were doing music differently than what Nashville was at the time.
That's what I was going to say, in that at that time, you know, the early to mid-90s, they were trying to put everybody, you know, they were trying to mold you into what they thought would sell records. There wasn't the door wasn't open to individualism and songwriters. It was, we need an act to look this way, sing this way, and go where we tell them. And that just wasn't what we were about.
Do y'all feel like it's easier now?
In Nashville, or just mean in the music business?
Just in the music business, to kind of do your own thing.
There's no question. I mean, you don't need a record label. And that's what a record label brought to the table, was money, legitimacy, and
marketing.
Yeah. I mean, getting your records out and then marketing you to the national audience to get your radio play. And we live in a world now where it costs very little money to record. It costs very little money to make a video. It costs nothing to get on YouTube and market yourself. You can hire an independent radio promoter that not everybody even listens to radio anymore. So it's certainly significantly easier to market yourself and get your music out to abroad. Anybody can get their song on iTunes or, you know, Spotify and things like that. So it's certainly easier from that perspective in this day and age we live in now.
In some ways, it's a little bit harder too. I mean, I'm just thinking about what Kelly had said about, you know, there's so many people who are making country music that it's all a little sounding the same, kind of top 40s kind of stuff.
Well, that's been That hasn't changed at any time, though. That's always been that way. You just eventually you have the cream rises to the top where you have somebody who's going to stick to their creative style until enough people hear it and they catch on and go, oh, actually, that's really good. It's always been that way. If you go back to the late 90s, there were like over 20 major labels in Nashville. And there's what, five now? That says a lot, right? So I don't think from that perspective, it's really any harder than it was. There's always people out there who are going to put on a hat and try to mimic somebody else, whatever the hot thing is at the time. But if you're somebody like Caitlin Butts or an individual singer-songwriter doing your own thing, it's significantly easier. There was no way to get that music in the ears of other people. And now there are ways to do that without a record label. Because back then, the only way anybody was going to hear your music was either radio or, you know, MTV or VH1 or CMT, whatever music genre there was. And you don't need any of that now. They don't even play music on those channels anymore. I don't agree with that. I think it's significantly easier or it's not any harder than it was. And if anything, it's easier for an individual to market themselves. Used to have to walk to Nashville uphill both ways in the snow, man. I don't know how hard it is now.
We sold cassettes out of a Suburban.
Yeah. Cassettes, man. Come on. We had to rewind, okay?
Yeah, so you guys self-produced this record?
Yeah, having Lloyd was great when we were younger, but now, you know, now we know how to put a record together. And so we produced it ourselves, and would have been nice to have Lloyd in the studio but COVID was going on and his wife was highly susceptible. And yeah, so it was just us, and it was perfect. It was what was supposed to be.
Is there a song on this album that feels just like vintage Great Divide?
I think Good Side does.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Something about Good Side kind of reminds me of Never Could. Something about, I don't know. There's just some sort of spirit in it.
I liked Slipping Away. I liked that kind of Jimmy Buffett song. That
I was just listening to some reggae that didn't have any lyrics to it, and playing in the background, and I started singing the chorus to Slipping Away to that. I thought, well, hell, I need to sit down and write a reggae song. So that's what I did. Castles in the sky, made for you and I. We both climbed so high and we just lay there. Right beside the wall, not afraid to fall. Time slowed to a crawl, but would not stay there. One of the recurring themes on the record is how much time do we have left down here? You know, time's fleeting. And what are we going to do with that time?
Yeah, I guess because of the pandemic, you know, a lot of people were face-to-face with their own mortality.
Yeah, that's always there. But now, you know, as we get older, we're in our 50s, you know, starting seeing people fall off, you know, and it's a short little amount of time. And I'm grateful to be able to go out and play music and enjoy that part of my life.
So when you guys are in the studio, was there a song that just took a lot of work to get everyone on board with, or just a lot of talking over?
You know, we explore tempos and turnarounds and changes. And, you know, I guess I'll say that aspect of the process for us has never really been that difficult. We've always been pretty good about just working it out and let's try that. No, it doesn't work. Let's try that. What do you guys think? Yes. And we just keep moving on. Some songs may take a little longer to get through just because you know, it's particular point in the day where you're tired or just can't get that tempo locked in on the click track or something. But it's not too bad for us when it comes to that. We've always been pretty smooth about that aspect of it.
Yeah. Is there a song that that you guys all felt immediately locked in on?
Yeah, maybe Good Side for sure.
That's what I was going to say.
I think we locked in pretty quick. Yeah.
Yeah, that one probably had the most juice, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
I felt like that was the overall message, you know, that's, I think, of the album, you know, the Good Side.
The last I heard, the world was ending, and everybody let each other down.
So I think there was an extra amount of energy in that, because, I don't know, for me personally, it just felt like it was the theme of it, and it was heavier than the others.
And I've been trying to place my mind in the middle of something better. And I've been trying to hold the line till we all get back together. Let's get back on the good side. Let's walk right out. The sunshine, the water's deep and the river's wide. Got to get back on the good side.
You know, if you think about it, we're not recording together for so many years as a group, one unit together in the studio. We had all the tracks laid down in 2 days. That's pretty unheard of. I mean, I was really impressed with how efficient we worked, and I certainly wasn't expecting for it to be that efficient. Just from my own perspective, I thought I would probably struggle more than that, but we really were very efficient getting the foundations of the songs down.
Broken down the words that I have heard, someone else has spoken. And the letting go and the coming home for something that I knew I really needed. So let's get back on the good side. Let's walk right out in the sunshine.
And the album's title, Providence, is there a meaning to why you guys picked that album title?
Yeah, Providence being like divine, like a divine right.
It was no mistake that we found ourselves where we were at.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's been the full circle of us when we started up until we split up, till we had our time in the wilderness, till we come back together. And then even through coming back together, going through growing together and becoming a cohesive unit, you know, all the way down the line, and that whole thing seemed like such a beautiful circle, and it just had to be divinely inspired, you know, and providential.
Songwriters and Tour Writers is a production of KOSU and Oklahoma State University. Our editor is Ryan McCroy, and our cover art was created by Terry Ferris. Matthew Viriapa.
Step into the world of limitless imagination with Beyond the Art podcast, where Indigenous creativity knows no bounds. Join me, Corey Beaumont Flynn, host of Beyond the Art, on a captivating journey through art and innovation, where we delve into the depths of imagination, daring to push the boundaries of what's possible. Our guests, hailing from the Native American art world, represent diverse artistic sectors, from musicians to photographers, beadwork artists to filmmakers, each sharing their unique creative vision and inspiring journeys. Search for Beyond the Art and start listening today.
Get ready for adventure with NPR's only actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. KOSU brings you Red Dirt D&D, featuring the world's greatest role-playing game, including music and sound effects like a classic radio show. Join our seasoned Red Dirt D&D players as they take you on a thrilling adventure through the world of Dungeons & Dragons. Catch new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as KOSU.org, or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
On This Week in Oklahoma Politics podcast, it's not just news headlines. It's a deeper conversation about what matters to you, your family, and your neighbors. Stay informed, stay engaged, and be part of the conversation shaping the future of our state. Subscribe now to This Week in Oklahoma Politics on your favorite podcast platform or at KOSU.org. This Week in Oklahoma Politics, your voice, your state, your podcast.